The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This podcast is part of the Podbelly Network. Please visit podbelly.com to see a complete listing of all of our other shows.
It's about to be a fun ride. Follow along, watch as we slide. Paranormal just hit the lights. Goosebumps all through the night. Mix in just a little bit of twang. That girl sure can't do a thing. Together, hillbillies go insane. Laugh so hard it'll hurt your brain. Podcast you won't ever change. These two here, they got the recipe. Sat on back and listen in to some of our darkest mysteries, eh?
Welcome to Hillbilly Horror Stories. And now here's your host, Jerry and Tracy Pauly, and their dog Ninja.
Hey guys, this is Eric and Jessica Carrier, the hosts of the Prairieland Paranormal Podcast.
If you're looking for a show that explores all things paranormal, with dramatic storytelling, historical research, relevant science, and witness accounts,
check out our show online at www.prairielandparanormalpodcast.com or through your favorite podcast player.
Welcome to episode 217 of Hillbilly Horror Stories. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Tracy.
Woo! We had a fun short today.
We did?
We did a short for our Patreon episode, and Tracy had one of her little laughing fits and wouldn't stop.
I know. It was really bad. But it was funny, though.
It was fun. We got an action-packed show tonight. First of all, we want to thank all of our military and civil servants all over the world, no matter which country you represent. Thank you guys for everything you do. What a special shout-out to all the firefighters out west, California, Oregon. You guys are going through it right now. So for any of our listeners that are out there, just prayers and thoughts are with you guys. And for the firefighters that are out there working their asses off, thank you guys for all you do.
God bless you guys so much. We love you. Be safe.
Tracy, some good things happened this week. I finished writing the book, and a big part of that book was dealing with depression.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the sayings that I used in the book was something that I've seen over and over throughout the years, and it's okay to not be okay.
Correct.
So if you're somebody who is struggling right now, whether it be from the coronavirus, whether it be from the fires, whether it be just from life in general, maybe you're going through a messy divorce or a breakup or whatever, crappy job situation, just know that brighter times are coming for you. That's a promise.
Mm-hmm.
It always gets better. You just got to wait sometimes longer than you want to see the end result.
Yeah. Please feel free to, you know, reach out to the group, reach out to me and Jerry. We would be happy to talk with you guys. You know, just don't sit alone and just, you know, think about it just to yourself. There's always people here to help you. And if you don't want to give us a, you know, talk to us, which we hope that you do, you can call the suicide hotline. It's 800-273-8255. You can text them at 741-741. We love you guys, and you mean the world to us. So please don't feel, you know, just reach out. That's all we want you to do, to somebody.
I don't know. In a couple of weeks, I think it actually might start next week, we're going to be partnering up with BetterHelp, mm-hmm. which is a counseling service, an online counseling service. So
awesome.
So you'll be hearing a little bit about them. But, you know, like I said, the important thing is just, you know, life sucks right now for a lot of different reasons. Just keep your head up and just try to pull through it and talk to whoever you need to in the meantime to get you through.
All right.
All right, so we have our snorting pig in the back. So we've got our original story tonight, which is going to be a little different than what we've done. So this is going to be fun. But we also have an interview at the end of the night with James and Beth from the Yesteryear podcast. So if you guys haven't heard them, it's fun. They actually go back and look at like 80s movies. It's a deal where James is the dad, Beth is the daughter. She's 17 years old.
How fun.
And movies that she hasn't seen, he goes back and has her watch, and then they kind of talk to you about all the different aspects of
right.
it. So it's a pretty fun show. They normally do home movies. They couldn't do a home movie because the segment is shorter on here than what they have on their podcast, but they picked out a segment of Creepshow.
Oh, fun.
Really fun show. You're going to like that.
Good.
Also,
you guys give them a listen.
Yeah, it's fun. You guys will like it. And like I said, I've heard them do a bunch of different movies. They just got through doing Scream. So that was one of the ones on there. So it's that time of the year.
Oh, yeah.
But they're fun. They're a fun podcast to listen to. Also, you might have heard on the beginning of the show there was a little bit of a promo. That's from Eric and Jessica from Prairie Land Paranormal. And they're a newer podcast. They're kind of a regional based up in that Illinois area. But, man, they're fun. So give them a listen, too. I think you guys will really like them.
Yeah, they are really fun. Give them a listen.
All right, Tracy, you ready to get into this week's show?
Oh, yeah. I'm ready.
Tracy, what if I told you that one of the most haunted places in California is also the happiest place on earth?
I will believe you.
Well, if that didn't give it away, tonight's episode is on haunted Disneyland.
And you said this is California?
Yes.
Well, you said California and then my mind went somewhere else. Like, you know.
Well, that makes sense.
You know what I'm saying? So I had to think about that.
See how I narrowed down the 50 states to one and your mind went elsewhere.
I'm talking about the fires and all that stuff. Goober. I'm sure it's not the happiest place on earth at the moment.
At the moment, it's closed. So.
Oh, is it really? Yeah. I thought it opened back up.
No, it's not open.
Oh.
So this place has so many stories that we're going to spend less time than normal on the history, and we're going to focus primarily on the paranormal aspects of the theme park tonight.
Okay, sounds great.
So Disneyland Park, that's what it's called now, Disneyland Park, was originally just called Disneyland.
What changed about it? I mean, why did it change?
Hold on, baby bird. I'll feed you.
Oh, dang.
It's in Anaheim, California, and it opened July 17th, 1955. It's the only theme park that was built and completely under the supervision of Walt Disney himself.
No kidding.
Yeah. Now, Disneyland in Florida was built 2 years later.
Uh-huh.
So here's a fun fact that we really don't get into the story. Everything, even though it was built 2 years later, everything in the Haunted Mansion in Disney World is the same age as what's in the Haunted Mansion in Disneyland. Because when they were building it, because they knew they were going to be building another one 2 years later, they ordered duplicates of everything.
Oh, cool. Well, and that was
so
smart.
They put it in the Haunted Mansion there, and then they stored the rest of it in a warehouse.
Oh, my goodness.
So, I thought
how smart was that? That was really good. You know, we've never been there. We needed to go.
I know. I was telling somebody about that the other night. So Walt Disney came up with the concept of Disneyland after he went to a whole bunch of other theme parks with his daughters in the 1930s and the 40s. Now, initially, he wanted to put it right next to his studios in Burbank, California, but he knew that that space was going to be way too small what would have been what his dreams were anyway. So he hired a consultant, and they found a location, which led him to buy 160 acres in Anaheim in 1953. The park's grand opening in 1955 was televised by ABC.
Oh, that's cool.
Which is kind of ironic because I think ABC, ESPN, and Disney are now all the same company.
Oh, no kidding. I didn't know that.
So the park has had several expansions since the original opening. Some of the additions were the New Orleans Square in 1966, Bear Country in 1972. At least that was the name when it was open. It's now called Critter Country if you go there now.
Critter Country?
Critter Country.
Country. Did I say country?
I don't know. Either way. Country. It's the same place.
Critter Country.
There you go.
I like that better anyway.
That's what you get for laughing earlier.
Oh.
In 1993, Mickey's Toontown opened up, and the latest was in 2019, the Star Wars Galaxy's Edge opened up. So there you go. Now, we mentioned, because this gets back to your question, the Disneyland Park now originally was Disneyland, but what happened was, with all the expansions in the 1990s, in 2001, Disney California Adventure Park was built on Disney's original parking lot.
Okay.
So now there were two parks, and they renamed that one Disneyland Park to separate it from the California Park. So there you go. But they're all in the same complex. You ready to get into paranormal stuff? I told you we was going to breeze through the history.
All right, let's do it.
Tracy, as usual, tonight's episode is brought to you by El Yucateco Hot Sauce, the number one habanero-based hot sauce in the United States. Top 10 of all hot sauces. Hashtag king of flavor.
There you go. Boy, that about wrapped it up. Except for it's delicious.
It is. And one of the things that I tried it on, I actually tried the jalapeno sauce, and I mixed it in with some nachos. So I had some nachos, and we melted some of that Velveeta.
We did. It was so good.
The white Casablanco cheese.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I guess white and blanco means the same thing.
It just, anyway. It just gave it that kick and just an extra little twang, which you know I like.
I like to put the jalapenos on there, but sometimes I just like the, mm-hmm. the jalapeno flavor in it without the actual jalapenos.
Yeah.
That's what I liked about it. So, but anyway, you can get it at most of your major grocers, Target, Walmart, or two of the big ones that carry it. If you don't see it there, ask them to start carrying it, or you can pick up yours at elyucateco.com. So thank them guys for helping us out.
Absolutely.
This was harder than I thought it was going to be, because you've got, you know, like if you go to like just a haunted house, it's one place.
Yeah.
But and Disneyland is one place, but there are so many different, you know, places inside, from Toontown to the New Orleans Square to Magic Mountain, all these different rides that I wasn't really sure how to keep them all straight. So I kind of organized them and separated them a little bit. The first one we're going to talk about, though, deals with the man himself, Walt Disney. So one of the buildings on Main Street inside of Disneyland is the Firehouse Building.
Okay.
Walt Disney had an office up on the second floor of the building, and it was an apartment and an office. So he used it for both. He mainly used this while construction was going on, right around the time the park was beginning to open. So he wanted to keep an eye on what was going on and be right there. But then also right after it opened, he felt the need to be there for a while too.
Well, good for him.
And then initially it was less and less time there. But during that time, he had an apartment there. And he would sometimes bring like VIPs that were visiting the park or celebrities or something up to his apartment to kind of entertain and give them a little getaway. When Walt was there, he would always turn on a lamp that was in the fire station window to let people know that he was in the park.
Oh, okay.
That's how you do. So if the light was on, you knew Walt Disney was actually in the park.
Oh, now was that for everybody to know?
Or yeah, just... that was for everybody to know.
Oh, gotcha.
Now, I don't know how many people actually knew that as far as like visitors. Mm-hmm. It might have just been that the park staff knew it, but I'm not sure. But that was the deal. So the light is now lit all the time in his memory, but that wasn't always the case. There was something, an event that led to that.
Oh.
So back before the light was lit, a cleaning woman was actually going up, and she was doing all of her regular cleaning and stuff. It was time to leave. And she turned the light off, and she left, locked up, left. When she got outside, she noticed that the light was on. And her initial thought was, I thought I turned it off, maybe I didn't. So she goes back inside, turns the light off again. She leaves again. There's the light on again. She knows for a fact, this time she turned that light off.
Yeah.
She goes back in the third time. She turns it off, but this time it turned on right in front of her. She didn't get a chance to leave the room.
Well, at least that saved her daggone trip.
Just as the light turned on, she heard a faint whisper say, I'm still here.
Wow.
And they've left that light on ever since as a tribute.
That is so cool.
Now, the firehouse itself, it's got some other issues as well. People hear knocking on the walls. They hear phantom footsteps. And they said they've even had objects move on their own, sometimes when people are watching. So, you know, sometimes people will say like, oh, I came in, there was this couch here, but now it's over there. They've actually seen the objects move with their eyes.
I wonder why they didn't see it move with their feet.
Okay, point taken. Point taken. Fair enough.
That's so cool, though. Like, seriously.
It is. Oh, it just gets cooler. There's all kinds.
Ooh, yay.
So I figure since there's so many stories in the park, like I said, we're going to organize them into categories. And what we're going to start with are some deaths that have happened in the park, most of which led to hauntings. So we're going to talk about those.
Okay.
In the summer of 1973, two brothers snuck onto Snuck. Okay. Two brothers snuck onto Tom Sawyer's Island, and they stayed until after the park was closed. They didn't want to alert anybody that they were there. They wanted to sneak over to the park itself. So the brothers decided that they were going to swim over the River of Americas.
What?
It's the River of Americas is right there. They were on an island. They were going to swim across Rivers of America and get to the main park. Well, it was two brothers. Like I said, one was 18, the other one was 10 years old. The older brother got in and he took the younger brother on his back and he started swimming across. And apparently it was a little farther than what he realized. And he became exhausted and the older brother drowned. The younger brother was able to stay afloat by dog paddling and eventually rescued by park employees, or as they prefer to be called, cast members. And
well, that's so sad.
They were unable to locate the deceased brother until the next morning.
Oh, my gosh.
There was also another 18-year-old who drowned in the Rivers of America in 1984. He and a friend got drunk, and they stole a motorboat. It was nighttime. They were taking a little joyride. He was thrown from the boat after they hit a rock, and he drowned before his friend was able to get help.
Oh, man.
It's said that you can hear splashing in the river after dark, which many assume to be the spirit of one of these two boys.
That's so sad. Just be legal, guys.
Yeah.
Don't have to go through all that stuff.
The next death we're going to talk about is involved with the Matterhorn ride. In May of 1964, a 15-year-old boy, he died 3 days after he suffered injuries on the Matterhorn. Matterhorn is one of these, it's like a mountain that's got like bobsleds that goes, you know, around and around.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And apparently, he was thrown from the car onto the tracks below.
Oh, good Lord.
Said he had unbuckled his seatbelt and attempted to stand up near the very peak of the mountain.
Why?
I don't know.
Oh, man.
But he did. 20 years later, in 1984, 48-year-old Dolly Young was thrown from her seat as the car went full throttle down the mountain and was run over by an oncoming bobsled. So the story on this one is that there was a little kid in the front seat and Dolly was in the back seat. Not really sure what the deal was, but Dolly unbuckled her seatbelt to somehow help the kid in the front. So we don't know what was going on, but the kid needed front. And when she unfastened herself, apparently they got to the part where it gets ready to go to the tunnel and she hit her head and was knocked off on below.
Oh, bless her heart.
And they say that they had to dismantle the track to dislodge her body.
Oh, good grief. Oh, my gosh.
So they say cast members who walk the track of the Matterhorn say that you can actually hear the disembodied voice of a woman, you know, right there. And there's a part there. They actually name it now before you get to that tunnel. They call it Dolly's Dip. Because that's where she actually, I guess, was knocked out of the thing. Now, there's some lights right at the end of the tunnel where this happens. And cast members have said that those lights are always burned out. Just for whatever reason, those lights always, they replace them and replace them. But there was one lady who said she worked there for 6 years and she don't think she ever saw the lights working. That's how often they burn out. In 1967, there was a teenager who was killed on what they call the People Mover ride. He tried to jump from one car to another and he was dragged to his death. His ghost is said to haunt Tomorrowland and likes to pull the hair of blonde guests.
That's just heartbreaking. It really is. It's supposed to be a fun place, and I know it is, but well, then you got people doing...
Well, abide by the rules.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. You don't abide by the rules, or like Dolly was trying to help somebody, you know, and it's just, it's really sad.
One of the more famous ghosts in Disneyland stems from a tragic accident on Grad Night in 1966. Now, they call it Grad Night because every June, Disneyland does an overnighter for people
for
who
seniors?
Graduated.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So on this night, a 19-year-old by the name of Thomas Cleveland, he climbed over two fences to sneak into the park. One of them was like a 12-foot fence, and the other was like a 6-foot fence. I mean, he climbed over a big fence to get into the park. But then once he did that, he climbed up onto the monorail track. Three security guards saw him, and they told him to get down. He didn't listen. Instead, he ran further down the track. The train came through going about 25 miles an hour, never even saw Thomas. They hit him, and it drug him 30 to 40 feet before the train stopped. The guy that was driving the train said all he knew is that, boom, something got hit, and then they came to a stop and lost power. That's all he knew.
I wonder why he had to, why did he sneak in?
I don't know.
I mean, why do you just not walk in?
I guess maybe didn't want to pay, didn't have the money. I don't know.
Oh,
I don't. I'm assuming you still had to pay to get in. I don't think it's a free thing.
We had our grad night at Kings Island.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
We had ours at a lake down by our house. Yay.
Oh, wow.
Lame. No rides, no nothing. Just stinky swamp. Anyway, cast members say that Thomas is now seen sometimes running at an extraordinary speed alongside the train at the area where he was killed, and then he just disappears.
Wow. What a shame.
There have been some other deaths at Disney. Not all of them are associated with hauntings, but I wanted to cover a couple more. In 1998, three people were killed, two guests, one cast member, when a sailing ship by the name of Columbia, this ship was tied off in that Rivers of America.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow or another, the rope came undone, and I guess it drifted. So when they came through on the shipwreck ride that they were on, the cleat on that big ship struck three people on the ride, and it caused all three of them to die.
Mm.
So it was like, I guess like a
back and forth thing? Like?
Yeah, something like that. It was, you know, like the thing for the mast or something like that, the big poles or something. In 1974, 18-year-old hostess by the name of Deborah Stone, her job was pretty much greeting people to come into the America Sings. And unfortunately, she was crushed between the rotating theater wall and the stationary stage. It had only been open for like 2 weeks. They had closed it down for a while. It was called something else. They opened it up under the new name. It had only been open 2 weeks when this happened.
Oh, my goodness.
And this... You know,
would it just like grab her clothes and pull her in or something?
I'm not sure exactly what happened. I think it was, there's just a part of it to where it comes together, and she somehow got in between the two.
Oh,
but they've, I guess, since had fixed it and all that and made it where that couldn't happen. But visitors that were there at the time this happened thought it was part of the show.
Oh, geez. So. That is. I bet that, I guess she didn't have any blood pop out or nothing, or they wouldn't have thought that, surely.
I don't know.
Oh,
but the cast members that work there now say that they hear a voice sometimes say, be careful. And then they also say that on the outer edge of the building is where the kid we were talking about, that the people mover ride that was killed by trying to jump from, that actually happened right out at the other end of the building at the outer edge.
Oh, no kidding.
So that was two different things that happened there.
Whew.
So what about people who may not have died there, but their remains end up there?
What the hell does that even mean?
Well,
I'm scared to hear this.
It's nothing nefarious, but quite the opposite. There is a rash of people who bring ashes of their loved ones to be scattered there.
No kidding.
Unfortunately, this usually happens at the Haunted Mansion or Pirates of the Caribbean. Disney does not approve of this.
Oh, I was going to say, yeah, what would they be thinking about that?
And it's actually a major problem. It's an environmental problem.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because, well, first of all, let's talk about the Haunted Mansion. people go in there and they sprinkle it, you know, during the ride. But then what ends up happening is they come through at the end of the night and do all their vacuuming and stuff. They end up just vacuuming the stuff up. So, I mean, it serves no purpose at all. Right, it all happens, right. And your loved one just gets pissed because they end up at probably the Anaheim dump or something.
Oh, my goodness.
You know. Because of the fact, though, that there's one particular lady who supposedly came in and put her son's ashes in there. There's a ghost called the Crying Child. It's one of the most famous spirits in the Haunted Mansion. He's usually at the exit of the attraction. He's crying and asking for his mother. So the legend is that his mom obviously spread his ashes at the ride, and now he's doomed to kind of be there for all of eternity. Or at least until they close down the ride.
I mean, it's kind of weird, but, you know, if Walt Disney kind of knew that a lot of people were doing this, that maybe he could just set aside a place. You know what I'm saying? Like an individual place that if people want to spread their ashes.
True.
Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. I mean.
Well, there's the other ride, the Pirates of the Caribbean ride, is where a lot of people do it. And like there was a deal back in, well, there was one just last year where there was a woman that she came in and she apparently was dumping a baggie of stuff into the water. And they had to stop the ride. They had to call authorities. And then once they couldn't find the woman, she was already gone.
Mm-hmm.
And they found the bag, but there wasn't enough in the bag to be able to determine exactly what it was.
Yeah.
So they really couldn't do anything anyway. They didn't even file a report because they couldn't find the woman. But they had to shut down the ride and everything. And this happens so much that it can be an environmental problem because they don't know if people are dumping ashes, if they're dumping some kind of chemicals. They don't. So
no, I totally get that.
The park actually has their own code for this happening. Mm-hmm. It happens so much.
And, you know, people that are doing that probably don't even think about that. All they're thinking about is like, oh, my gosh, this where he came all the time and he loved this place. They probably don't even think of that.
Well, and then there's one woman, and I lost the story. I tried to go back and find the story, and I couldn't find it. So I can't remember exactly where it was. But there was a woman that I don't know if it was on the Tom Sawyer Island, but she actually put her daughter's ashes out there,
mm-hmm.
knowing that it probably wouldn't get swept up or taken away or whatever from that standpoint. So some people did actually think about it. So while we're on the subject of the Pirates of the Caribbean, when they first opened the attraction in 1967, they used real human skeletal remains from UCLA Medical Facility.
Oh my gosh.
Because they felt like the fake ones that they had were too phony looking.
Yeah.
So since then, it's been replaced with more realistic fake ones.
But I'm surprised they were allowed to do that.
Well, I mean, they're just, it's not like people are climbing on them. They're just set off in the distance for people to look at.
And you said, but, go ahead.
But there's a giant headboard that has a skull and a crossbone. And the rumor is that those are still a real skull and real crossbones in there. So we'll see. All right, let's talk about a few little individual sightings. There's a woman is often seen on Main Street. She wears 19th century clothes, and she likes to help out lost children. Matter of fact, she's often seen taking them to the Disneyland Baby Care Center, where the employees turn to thank her, and then she disappears.
No kidding.
And it happens all the time, usually almost always with lost kids.
Aww.
So I thought that was cool.
But that's very cool.
There's also a lady in white that's seen on Main Street,
mm-hmm.
that she's believed to have been somebody that was there way before it was Disneyland, just on the property. And she's seen walking up and down. And some people say that she's a separate entity, and some people say it's the same one who helps the kids. So I thought I would bring it up both ways just in case.
Hmm.
At the exit of the Star Tower in Tomorrowland, there is a little store, I guess, called Star Trader. On the fourth floor, they've got a stockroom that has been got kind of a reputation for having cold spots and an overall creepy feeling. Then there's a little booth called the Hatmosphere. That's interesting.
The Hat?
Hatmosphere. Hats. This is one of the more unique stories I've ever heard. They have a sewing machine there, and they use that to embroider the names on the hats.
Uh-huh.
They said it never gets warm, even after it's been used all day long.
Well, I mean, wow. But that's kind of cool, though.
First time I've ever heard about a haunted sewing machine.
Now, me too.
It's even said that on one occasion that one of the cast members there saw a face on the sewing machine. I don't know how that happens, but
my goodness.
Tracy, you'll like this. there's an ice cream cart that is supposedly haunted. He said that people can hear a woman's voice coming from it when nobody's around.
I wonder how I feel about that. Guess it depends on if she's eating all the ice cream.
Right. So let's move on to Space Mountain. So we've got a few spirits to talk about here. The first one is Disco Debbie. Debbie is seen as a glowing green ghost, and it's said that she was a former cast member who died of an aneurysm behind the Space Mountain building.
Oh, man. Poor thing.
Now, the most famous one is Mr. One Way.
Mr. One Way.
And when you think about it, everybody's one way on this ride.
Well, there you go. That's true.
I mean, because, I mean, it's not like you go and then come back. Mm-hmm. I mean, you go one time and you get off. Anyway, this is a large redheaded guy with a red face. And he
high
wears
blood pressure? High blood pressure?
Probably. He wears 1970s clothes. And he usually likes to sit next to somebody that is a single rider.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're single and you got a seat open, there's a good chance he's going to pop up. But he's always gone by the time the ride's over. And most people say that he looks realistic. He doesn't look like a ghost. He looks like a person. And all they know is they got somebody sitting next to him. And when they get through, there's not a person sitting next to him.
Okay, yeah, that would freak me out totally.
So the speculation is this is a ghost of a man who actually died on the ride back in the 1970s. And they base this on the fact that he wears 1970s clothes.
Oh, okay.
He's also seen in the cast member locker room there at Space Mountain. So there's a great video that I will encourage anybody to go look this up. It shows, it's a security camera.
Mm-hmm.
And it's showing, you know, the ride. It's in the front and it's showing people getting on. And you see what looks like, I don't know, an apparition maybe. Go right through the counter and go and take a seat. Right next to somebody on an empty seat.
What?
You have to look close because you almost can't see anything. But when you look close, you can see it.
Oh, I got to look that up when we're done.
And it's definitely not the only apparition video we're going to talk about when it comes to this place. So let's talk about the Haunted Mansion. This brings us to the video I just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
It happened in 2009. It was filmed from the park's surveillance camera. So this is not just an individual. This was from the park itself. It shows a figure walking from the haunted mansion down the path. Now, this was after hours. It was dark. There was nobody else around, so there was no people or anything. You just see this thing walking. Some think it's Walt Disney, but others seem to think that it's a gentleman that was a former cast member by the name of Javier Cruz. He fell off of a float in 2004 during the parade and died. It was Beauty and the Beast's float, matter of fact.
Dang.
The Haunted Mansion also has a ghost of an old man. Now, this old man is seen on the ride so many times that the cast members have a rule. If the ride comes through and there's only one person on it, and it's an old man, just let it go. Because by the time it gets back around, he won't be there. So they all kind of know to look for this old man. He's there so much.
Well, that's cool.
So, you know, we were talking about people, you know, putting their ashes and stuff in there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one time outside the Haunted Mansion in a flower bed, the cast members found an urn buried.
Oh, like the whole entire thing?
The urn, it was empty, which means they had dumped ashes somewhere. Out,
yeah.
But they found the urn that was buried in the flower bed, and it said, "Rest in peace, Grandma Joyce." And they kept it in the video camera room for years, and eventually they ended up moving it to the catwalks over top of the Haunted Mansion inside. So.
Oh, I bet those, I guess they would never know who the family members are, but I bet that would be cool for them if they happen to come back and see it there.
So now that's actually part of the thing, mm-hmm. I think, I'm sure you can see it from the ride. So that's pretty cool. Then they have the seance room that's inside there. Now, back when this first started taking place, when they were building this thing back in the 1960s, this is kind of funny. There was a worker who was building stuff, and he started hearing a radio. And he assumes there was a radio that somehow got put in a wall, like by accident.
Oh.
But because there was music constantly playing, but he noticed that there was never any DJs or any breaks or any commercials. This is like not like they had, you know, iHeart or Spotify back then where you could have that. And so he checked all over the place and couldn't find anything. And eventually he just took another speaker and put it in its place so he could drown it out because it freaked him out so much because he never could figure out where it was coming from.
That is crazy. I wonder how long it took him to think about that. About, hey, wait a minute, there's no commercials.
I don't know.
Wow. All
right, so there's also a ghost. This is not in a haunted mansion, but supposedly there's a ghost that sits on top of the castle during the fireworks and then just disappears when the fireworks are over. And there's been several people that took pictures and have sent it in. Some people say that they think maybe it's just a maintenance man or something that's just enjoying the view up there because it's like an image all in gray. But it's been captured many times on video and just pictures. So I thought that was really cool. In 1999, the infamous ride, It's a Small World.
It's a small world.
It had to be stopped at one point. There was something going on. And everyone had to exit the boat. And guests started just snapping some pictures and stuff. And one of them captured a picture of a ghost child hanging from a rafter.
What? Yeah. What?
The legend is that so many people love this ride that they come back here after they die. And the lights like to kind of turn off and on in itself while they're in there. And it's said that the dolls keep singing and dancing hours after the electricity has been turned off. So they shouldn't be able to do that. But yet several cast members have videos of the dolls and stuff moving.
Well, must be true then.
With no electricity. On the Pirates of the Caribbean, there is a ghost boy who is seen on the video monitor. He seems to always be happy and he enjoys himself. But when the boat gets back onto the station, it's always empty.
Isn't that amazing? I just want to see something like that one time.
It's also said that Walt Disney's ghost likes to hang out in the Disney gallery that is right above the Pirates of the Caribbean. So it's like a little gallery up there.
You know, it's funny because I wonder how many people think that if they do see that, that it's just an illusion. I mean, you can do so many things now with all these rides.
Especially like in a haunted mansion.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you're familiar, but like when you're in a haunted mansion and you go around, there's like ghosts and stuff dancing and it looks like real ghosts.
Uh-huh.
And what they've done is they've got a mirror that's out there. Mm-hmm. Or not a mirror, just glass, like a window. And so it's clear. But where you can't see, they have people dancing and like the real animatronic type things.
Yeah.
So they got them dancing, but they've got them painted in like super different colors and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is when the reflection onto the glass makes them look ghosty. So you're seeing their reflection from what you can't really see hidden.
That's amazing.
But that's how they make it look ghosty. It's pretty cool.
That's very cool what they can do these days for sure.
So that's what I've got as far as the ghost there. But I have some actual encounters that cast members have described seeing.
Oh, cool.
Things that they've had.
Oh, I can't wait.
So this first one was from Annabelle Kay. It's called the Men's Room Basement Ghost. So I worked a third shift custodial. Everyone jokes around about the park being haunted, especially if you're new. I was in my first year as a third shift custodial. I had already heard all sorts of ghost stories from other cast members, so I was afraid to work alone anywhere in the park. At this point, I hadn't had anything happen to me till this night. I'll never forget it. So I was working in Toontown, and I was assigned to work in Mickey's basement, which is below Mickey's house. There's a set of bathrooms, a break room, and a small gym. I started off by cleaning the men's bathroom, then went over to the women's bathroom. As I was in the women's bathroom, I started to hear something moving around, and I wasn't sure what it was. I ignored it and continued to work. Then I started to sweep the gym, and again, I heard something moving. This time, I heard it coming from the men's bathroom. So I shouted, "Hello? Anyone in the men's bathroom?" There was no response. So I took a look at the men's bathroom and nothing. No one was in there, so I continued to work. As I'm in the break room, I hear it again. Something moving around in the men's bathroom. I mean, you already know they got mice. I go look again, and the trash can was in the middle of the bathroom. I had just thought maybe I didn't move it back when I was cleaning, so I moved it back to the side. I'll go back to cleaning the break room. Then I start to sweep and mop all the floors. As soon as I started to mop, there it goes again. Movement in the men's bathroom. I go look, and the trash can was moved again. This time, it was in the opposite side of the room. That's when I started to get scared. I moved it back and was trying to rush out of there. I had already finished the bathrooms and the gym. When I was halfway done in the break room, I hear the trash can move once again. And this time, I ignore it and try to move as fast as I can. At this point, I'm scared. I don't even want to be down there. I'm thinking in my head, if there's something down here, it can't hurt me. I just need to hurry. I'm almost done. And that's when I hear, right off my left shoulder, "Get out." In the most creepiest voice. I kind of froze. I could feel my hair standing straight up. I grabbed all of my stuff and I ran out of there. I didn't finish mopping. I was so scared I didn't want to finish. I just ran out of there. To this day, I won't step foot down there alone. After that, I'd heard other stories from other cast members who had experiences down there as well. And every story had something to do with the men's bathroom. From hearing things and seeing shadow figures, I have had other experiences in the park, but this one, by far, was the scariest.
Oh, I'm sure. And I wouldn't want to be down there by myself at all.
Yeah, me either.
Not even before that happened, I wouldn't want to be in there by myself.
This next one is submitted by Mike A. It's called New Orleans and Toontown Encounters. I worked custodial from 2002 to 2004. I had some bizarre things happen to me. One night in New Orleans, I was emptying the trash from the exhibit of the Haunted Mansion, right where the escalator ramp takes you up. I came the back way down the employee stairs, and I saw an elderly woman in an antique-looking wheelchair sitting in the hallway. I thought nothing of it and opened the door to where the trash can was. As I heard the door open with my foot trying the trash bag, I thought to myself, what was that guest doing in an employee-only hallway? The park has been closed for a while. When I turned to go back down the hallway, not even 5 seconds later, the lady was gone. I was kind of creeped out, but I shrugged it off and I went on my business. As the night went on, I could not stop thinking about that woman in the wheelchair. It wasn't the rental wheelchairs. This one looked like it was made of wood. I finished my shift and I forgot about it. I used to hear tons of stories from coworkers about certain areas being haunted, so I would always wander around the park exploring. Disney is creepy when it's empty, so I can see why people would have stories of being watched or having strange feelings. I remember sweeping the line for Roger Rabbit one night. Out of the corner of my eye, I see a man standing near me in a navy blue t-shirt and a black Dickie-style shorts. I asked if he needed anything, and when I looked up, he was gone. I walked pretty fast all the way through the line looking for him, and nobody was in there. Nobody was in there because Toontown was closed. It seemed like everyone had a haunted mansion, haunted bathroom, Tom Sawyer, or Toontown story, so I keep these strange things that happen to myself. I felt like nobody would believe me anyway. A few months later, I was talking with a woman that had worked there for a long time. Someone had committed suicide in the parking structure that summer, so we were talking about deaths in the park and the possibilities of the supernatural. She told me a story about sweeping inside the Haunted Mansion at the bottom of the elevators after the park had closed, seeing an elderly woman in a wheelchair. When she looked up to speak to her, the room was empty. I thought to myself, no way, how familiar. I didn't tell her what had happened to me, but I had a lump in my throat and felt pretty creeped out for a long time. I was always curious about the spirits and the supernatural, but wasn't sure if I believed any of that, in that kind of stuff. I'm still not sure I believe in that kind of stuff, but I cannot explain who these people were or where they came from.
I bet that place is creepy at night.
I guarantee.
Oh, yeah.
This next one is called The Locker Ghost Girl from David V. In August of 2019, so this one's recent, I saw something at the Disneyland Resort that rattled me to my core. It was just a subtle, creepy moment, but it's stuck with me ever since. Well, it has only been a year. After Disney's D23 Expo in Anaheim, my sister and I headed to the theme parks for a late lunch. Since we had bags filled with merchandise from the expo, we rented a locker near the Disney California Adventure entrance. Parks were crowded that Saturday, and we saw several people wander out of the nearby restroom, wiping the sweat from their foreheads. The locker area was small, wonderfully cool, and thankfully uncrowded. It was just us and a young girl with fair skin that I noticed out of the corner of my eye. She crouched against the far wall, digging out of the bottom row locker. As my sister and I chit-chatted about our first ride, we kept our voices low as not to bother her. After a couple of minutes, I realized that the girl had been crouched for quite a while. Though I couldn't tell how old she was, I thought it was odd that she was alone for so long. I didn't want to rudely look directly at her, so I kept track from the corner of my eye just to make sure that she was okay. The girl played with her long yellow skirt as if dusting it off. I thought the pattern was out of place, either red polka dots or strawberries. It looked something like a person would wear on Dapper Day. Suddenly, the girl turned around. I stopped keeping track of her and focused on my sister, who was stuffing her things into our locker. Still, I couldn't see the girl's eyes on us. I looked again from the side, hardly able to see her in my peripheral vision. She was standing now, staring at us. I noticed her short, dirty blonde hair and the skirt's length as it cascaded to her ankles. She was taller and older than I expected, probably a young teenager. What was she doing? Why was she looking at us? It was just too weird, and I needed to know. I quickly crammed my bag into the corner locker and shut it. I could still see the girl watching us. All at once, I gave up my reservations and turned around. No one was there. The locker area was totally empty. There wasn't a thing that resembled a yellow dress or a girl with fair skin. For a moment, I stared at the emptiness with goosebumps racing down my arms. "Are we going over to Disneyland?" asked my sister. She looked toward me and I noticed my flustered face. "What's wrong?" I said, "Did you see the girl near those lockers?" "Yeah, I saw someone," my sister muttered. She had noticed the girl too, but I didn't have to explain. My sister was already staring at the empty row of lockers near us. I watched the color swiftly leave her face. "No, no, no." I told my sister about the ghost I'd seen at Disneyland before, and now she'd seen one too. The moment was haunting and darkening on that sunny afternoon. My sister reopened the locker and yanked our things out. With our arms full, we rushed over to Disneyland, ripping our bags and unable to shake the ghostly girl from our minds.
Well, I mean, at least they both saw it, so.
I mean, first of all, you already paid for the locker.
Well, yeah.
And you already had your stuff in it.
Right.
I guess maybe they just didn't want to face the fact of returning.
To get their stuff, yeah.
Returning to get it. Yeah. So maybe that was the case.
Could be. I understand that.
Well, Tracy.
What?
We're going to take a really quick break from our sponsor, and then we will be back to talk about our Patreons and our upcoming shows and our iTunes reviews. And don't forget, we have an awesome interview coming up from the Yesteryear podcast.
Yes. Sounds great.
All right, Tracy. So we've got the Bobby Mackey's tour still coming up. We've sold a bunch of tickets. There's more than half gone now.
I know. I'm so excited.
October 25th. It's a Sunday right outside of Cincinnati, Northern Kentucky. It's going to be so much fun. It comes with a tour if you buy that one. And that's $25 a piece. Or you can buy a seat that doesn't have the tour attached for only $10 if you just want to get in. There will be social distancing. This place seats a ton of people. We're only going to have probably 60, 70 people in there. It seats probably 200 in that
main room.
Easy. So we'll be able to social distance everybody. We'll have masks. We'll have sanitizer and all that stuff on hand. Mm-hmm. So don't worry about any of that stuff.
And yeah, I've been seeing where Bobby's been posting some stuff on Facebook, like of him back in the day, like, that's just crazy looking, but it's so cool. He's just like been posting a bunch of old pictures and stuff.
Yeah, keep in mind this is they're not open that day, so it's just going to be us in there. So you don't have to worry about other crowds.
No.
So we got that.
Yes, we do.
Do you want to read our iTunes reviews?
Sure. This week we had Lisa B, me, and only Mister Jason B, and our good old friend Mojo Lobster. Thank you guys for your very nice reviews. They were really, really very nice.
Yep. And on Patreon, I want to say real quick, we do have Patreon where you get extra bonus episodes. Mm-hmm. You get, we do shorts. So you get, if you sign up for the maximum, which is $15 a month, but there's everything from $1, $3, $5, $10, and $15. But the maximum gets you 24 short episodes, 2 full-length episodes, and all of the regular episodes here commercial-free.
Correct.
So, and discounts.
Yes. And what is it, like a
10% off,
10% off merch or 20% off all your merch?
And we're getting ready to switch merch stores, so we'll be able to give everybody an actual code to be able to do it. It's a pain in the ass to do it now. You got to go in and change it, and we got to change it ourselves, and then you have to order, then we got to change it back because our merch store doesn't have an ability. But the new merch store will, so that'd be good. Go ahead.
All right. And our Patreons this week was Tanya, Alyssa, and Kentucky Covert. You guys are awesome. Thank you so much for your support. We appreciate y'all so much. It means the world to us. Keep those reviews coming. Like we said, it's getting that Halloween spooky time. If you guys want to try to order merch, if you have any problems with it, just let Jerry know and he'll help you out with that. So, yeah,
like I said, I can't wait for the new one to be in. And it just literally is me having the time to.
Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
That and rebuild the store, and that takes like 2 days. So
yeah, well, you can do that now since you're done with your book, so you'll have more time.
Yes, and the book, by the way, it's still going to be probably end of October at the earliest where it comes out, because we still got to go through the whole editing process and proofreading and stuff like that. But it is written, and I'm happy with it, so I'm excited about that. Now, one last thing before we get into our interview, we are selling advertising on Hillbilly Horror Stories. So if you have like an Etsy account or an online business, or you've got a podcast and you want to try to get more listeners or something, we've got a couple of different options that they start at $25 for the cheapest option. So it just gives you a chance to build a little something for everybody. But if you want to look into it, feel free to send me an email. It's jerrypauly@aol.com. And I'll be more than happy to send you out a list with all the packages we have and all the pricing.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's listen to the Yesteryear podcast. I think you guys are going to like this. We had fun with this one. Hey, guys. We got some fun guests on tonight. We like to bring on fellow podcasters whenever we can. And this one's a little bit different than what we normally have. We've got Beth and James on from the Yesteryear podcast. What they normally do is they go back and they find some movies from like the 1980s, and they try to find one, I think, mainly that Beth probably hasn't seen. And then they all watch it, then they discuss it and have a good time. And it's a really fun podcast. And it's especially fun when they do the scarier shows. I know you guys just did, I believe, Scream.
Yeah.
And that was a really fun episode. And, you know, we're not going to have time to do a complete movie tonight. So what you did, though, was you picked out one of my favorite all-time movies, Creepshow. And you're going to do a segment from that. Now, before you guys get into this, I want to tell you my funny Creepshow experience.
Okay.
So my kids and I are all warped. I was taking them to see horror movies when they were 5, 6, 7 years old. They've grown up around this stuff and they absolutely love it. I didn't damage any of them, I don't think. But I'm sure looking back, I probably should have did things different. But either way, Creepshow is one of our favorite shows. And on Father's Day, every year, we sit down and watch Creepshow. That's our tradition. And the main reason is because of the segment, obviously, with the Father's Day cake.
Yep.
And my son, this past Father's Day, actually bought me a black t-shirt that has the comic book version of that with the way it ends with the creature sitting there holding the plate with the cake on it.
That's so cool.
So that's how much we love Creep Show. So when you guys said y'all were doing this, I was thrilled to death. So before we get into what you guys are going to do, James, you and Beth, introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about why you started the podcast and what you hope to accomplish with it.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And thank you very much for having us on. I wanted to say
you're welcome.
It's awesome to be on this one. I don't think anybody knows or could know. When I first got introduced into podcasts, just to give it a little bit of background, and then I started picking my own, you guys were, I'm going to be honest, number two. Brohio was the first one that I stumbled across just because it was in there as like recommended. And then I found you guys from them immediately. And so you are my second oldest podcast that I've ever listened to for years. So I really enjoy it. And I really say thank you for having me on here. We started the Yesteryear podcast this year, me and Beth. We wanted to do something fun and something quasi-original. You know, we're both into, especially her, into the genre of, I can't even think of what it's called. True crime type stuff. Obviously, like, that's where I, you know, with you guys and everything, and just really enjoy those kind of podcasts. But I didn't want to do another one and just basically feel like I was falling behind you guys. So I said, well, what do I know? What do I love? And it was like movies. Yes. And then I decided, I talked with Beth and I was like, you know what would be great is if we did movies that you have either never seen or don't really remember seeing or anything like that. And then we could get your view on them of what you think about these movies from the past. And that's really how it was kind of born out of that. We did, Labyrinth first was the first one that we did.
Yep.
And then we went from there, and that's really how this kicked off. Beth, you want to introduce
yourself? It started off as kind of a joke, one of those things that you share on Facebook and you're like, oh, this would be crazy if this happened, and then it just kept happening. It was just something that kept progressing, and suddenly there was a link to the equipment we use now on Facebook, and then suddenly we were ordering it and it was here in boxes, and then suddenly we just sat down and recording our first episode. It was just very quick, and I was nervous to do it at first because we had talked how our humor works. We always think that we are the funniest people in the world,
yeah.
But together. So separated, it's kind of harder, or like, you know, we go off of other people is our humor. We make fun of other people and then it's funny. And then, so,
same here.
So we were concerned that if together we were trying to do the banter and the funny to keep people entertained, it wasn't going to be all that. But you know, people just ate it up and we just kept doing it, and I enjoy doing it. It's really funny to me.
It's more of a labor of love. I absolutely love doing this. If one person listened, if 1,000 people listened, I enjoy doing this. I enjoy spending the time with her. You know, it gives me an opportunity to have bonding time with my child, which, you know, as they get older, it's harder and harder to do. So being able to do that is most important. Then being able to bring, I think, a little bit of light and a little bit of joy into the world is another thing. I know that sounds cliche and, you know, but it's truly do. I mean, I get a lot of people that email, you know, of course my family listens and stuff like that. And they're like, it's brought us as a family, my sisters, my dad, everybody as a, you know, closer. Because they're like, oh my gosh, I remember that and this, that, and the other. And then they all listen and then they all talk about it. So it gives an opportunity for that. And then I have friends and then people, and I'm sure it happens with you as well. I can't imagine that doesn't, where people are like, hey, you know, you should do this. Hey, you know, you should do this. Yep. And it's like, hey, what about this movie? And I'm like, yeah, man, it's on the list. I promise you. It is. We're going to get to it eventually. So, but I like that.
I think it's really cool that y'all are able to do that together. Like I said, and you know, like we do something with a husband and wife deal. So I know it is really cool when you can do something with somebody that you're close to, especially with like a father daughter deal. I've had all of my kids have been on the podcast at least one time or another. And I love being able to do that. I wish we could do it more.
Yep.
So Beth, how old are you?
I'm 17. I'll turn 18 in March.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, it's you guys have a great dynamic. So, why don't we jump into what you guys have for us? And this will give all of you out there an example of how the show is, so you can go subscribe as soon as this is over to the Yesteryear podcast.
Very cool. And if you have anything that you want to interject, please do as well. I know that you will, but being Creepshow and you being down with it, if there's anything that I discuss and you want to throw it in there, please do. Make for it.
Awesome.
So, of course, we start off and we're doing Creepshow. So our first thing that we would do is we're going to ask Beth what her initial impression was of the movie with the artwork and the review and the preview of it.
So I have never heard of this before, ever. And it being, it's, I think, not, what is it, 1982?
Yep.
I mean, that's old for me. That's one of the older ones we've done. And you handed me the DVD, like, case for it. And I looked down at this movie and it kind of gave me, like, Where the Sidewalk Ends kind of vibes. You know, gotcha. The book. So, stuff that's like short stories like that are as scary stories told in the dark.
Yep.
Stuff like that. So, that's kind of my first impression of it. But then, you know, we sat and we watched the trailer. And the trailer, it shows that it's all, a bunch of different things cut up into one. And it was just, it was really interesting to see. So, I was looking forward to doing this because it wasn't going to be the same story throughout.
Yeah.
So, I was looking forward to it.
All right. Creepshow came out in 1982, excuse me, and it's an anthology which tells five terrifying tales inspired by the EC horror comic books of the 1950s, which is before my time as well, obviously. it was directed by George A. Romero and written by Stephen King, which is like two godfathers, in my opinion, of the horror genre.
Yeah, absolutely.
Its official release date was November 12th, 1982, so I was all of about to turn five. It had a budget of around $8 million, and the movie earned over $5 million in its opening weekend and grossed over $21 million in total, so certainly considered a success. Our thing is, anytime that it makes double its budget, then it's considered a success, and then everything after that is considered... you know, easy money for them. So that's how Hollywood defines a success.
Yeah, it's crazy to me how nowadays we have movies that, you know, get about, you know, the same amount of money put into them, $80 million. And, you know, the vast difference of having an $80 million movie back then versus one now, you know, different technology, budget-wise, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so while this movie doesn't look that great, FX-wise, it probably did for its time, but, like, nowadays, you know, if you look at this movie, it's not nearly as good as what nowadays movies are, but with the same kind of, well, you know what I mean? Like, you know, with green screen effects and background and stuff like that, or the gore.
I guess, man. I love this. I love the visceral tearing of the flesh looking, blood goozing out and stuff like that physical aspect of it, as opposed to green screen and knowing that something's CGI and stuff like that. Yeah, it looks cool, and yeah, he's flying and everything like that, but you know that it's CGI. This here, this is a physical thing, man. You can touch it. It still exists.
Yeah.
That's me.
Fair. It's fair.
So, my parents were pretty messed up as well and allowed me to watch this stuff because it was the 80s. And that's what parents did. You know, it's like, watch the movie. Oh, it's rated R? Meh. You'll be okay. All the stories in the movie scared the bejesus out of me. And again, since there was no CGI at the time, everything was so physical and visceral. You know, body parts being torn off, twisted, blood gushing. It was all real, and especially to a five-year-old kid. I mean, some of the other stories in this are, you know, we're not going to go into them, but man, just crazy. Heads on plates, and I got my birthday cake. And, you know, and then the roaches were all real. In the very, they'll creep up on you episode, man. Those things were real, and that just freaked me out, especially growing up in Florida where we had palmetto bugs and such.
Oh, yeah.
Flying at your head and everything. Oh, my gosh. That part gave me – like, sometimes I would end at the crate because I couldn't watch the last episode. So, needless to say, I did lose a good bit of sleep over this movie, especially since they didn't have buttoned-up endings, which I liked. The endings – They didn't leave necessarily a resolve, or, you know, the horror lived on. Even at the end of this, we'll get to it. It doesn't end nice. As I stated, there are five stories in the movie that are told. The story that we're going to be reviewing, The Crate, stars Hal Holbrook, Adrian Barbeau, and Fritz Weaver. And to me, of the five stories, it's the scariest. So.
Yeah, I agree.
So, this being based off of a comic book, the story begins with animated pages flipping to the story of the crate. You see a custodian flipping a coin, and it drops and rolls onto the stairs. As he attempts to fish it out with a broom, he sees a crate. We then flip to a scene where the head of a college is introducing a new couple. And the two existing professors, Dexter and Henry are their names. Those are like the main guys. We also meet Henry's obnoxious lush of a wife, Wilma, or Billy. We were talking a little bit before. So she was on Maud? Is that what she was on?
Yeah, it was Maud. She was a daughter on Maud.
That's so crazy to me. Because, see, I always knew her as Billy. I'd seen her in things after this, but I always knew her as Billy. And I was like, oh, she's not always like that. That's interesting.
Yeah, her other big one, obviously, was The Fog.
Yes. Yep, the original. Oh, well, yeah, the original to me. Because, they, you know, that came out again in 2005, I think it had a remake of it. So, yep. So, Billy is quite loud and treats Henry poorly. She basically spends the entire party embarrassing Henry with her language and forwardness. Henry and Dexter seem to have a friendship, and Dexter seems to have an affinity for the younger girls. Like, he's, like, flirting it up with one of the girls and everything. He's like, oh, we can talk about it later. Did you see that?
Yeah, I saw.
So, Dexter gets called away by a phone call at the party, and it's the custodian saying that he found the crate and that he thinks he should come check it out. He is calling from the college to alert Dexter. Dexter plays it off as if nothing serious, but then when the custodian reads off the date of June 19th, 1834, he seems to be quite concerned. Like, they're saying, oh, it might just be filled with some old magazines or whatever, but then he's like, no, I think it's something more, so I'll go ahead and come down there and check it out. He also says that the crate is from an Arctic expedition. So, pretty crazy stuff already being introduced, and I like that they went through with the wife to really introduce her right off the jump as being like she was.
Yeah, at first I didn't really, I didn't really like how rushed it felt.
Yeah.
But then I realized, you know, for such a short movie, it was a good way to introduce everyone, having a, what would you call it, like a gathering like that, a little food party. It was a good way to show characters without having to do individual scenes really quickly. So it was a smart play on their end.
Yeah. So Henry watches as Dexter leaves and then turns to see Billy making an even bigger ass out of herself, basically. he calls to her and pulls out a revolver and shoots her in the head. Now, what did you think about
that? That really caught me off guard. Because, again, I had no idea what this movie was about.
Right.
So I'm sitting here and I'm watching. It's like, oh. And then everyone just starts clapping. Yep. So I was like, I guess this is allowed in this day and age. So, the 80s were a wild time, so.
Yeah, everyone starts golf clapping at what he did and, like, appreciates the, you know, finally put her, he's like, nice shot, a bullseye. But then we see that it's just a daydream. Instead, Billy just belittles him in front of everyone about how he is so lucky to have her to take care of him. So, later that night, Dexter and the custodian are pulling off the grate under the stairs and to get to the crate. And it's, like, mad dusty under there. Like, it's been under there for a long time. So, Dexter asks what the custodian was doing looking under the stairs. He says he had lost his quarter. That was for the last one that he had, basically, for the Pepsi machine. Because he was trying to flip heads or tails on if he was going to buff the floors or do the windows. So, not imperatively, you know. Important, but
that's a little character layering, though.
Give us some onion.
Give you some onion.
So they get the crate and move it onto one of the lab's tables to get a better look at it. And both of them are pretty sure they felt something move inside of the crate. So the custodian goes to get a hammer and chisel to open it. Meanwhile, back at Billy and Dexter's or Henry's. Billy is once again lecturing Henry about making sure he cleans up after having Dexter over to play chess. And to be sure to give him, to wash the pots, make sure everything's put up, and make sure to have him gone before she gets back because she hates the stink of his cigars or whatever, his tobacco, is what she says. So Henry once again daydreams about killing her by choking her out with his tie, but just says, yes, Billy. as she leaves.
You know, so, I think the whole daydreaming or the flashback kind of thing is really popular in horror movies where they have a fake, kind of like a fake out to throw the viewer off.
Yeah.
That was really popular for a while. I've noticed that in some of the ones we've done that are kind of horror based, they use that tactic a lot to throw you off guard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you, what did, I mean, did you think like, oh, this is another daydream, or did you think that he was really choking her out?
I honestly I couldn't tell. Because the bigger part of you is like, oh, they're just doing it again, but then it keeps going on. You're like, oh, is he actually killing her? He's just choking her out in the yard?
Yeah.
What are the neighbors going to think?
What are the, right, close the door at least before you choke her out.
The neighborhood watch are going to have a meeting about you, how terrible you are.
So we're back at the college, and Dexter and Mike, the custodian, are opening the crate, which is not only locked with chains, but nailed shut as well. Clearly saying, keep this shut, but, you know, whatever. You want to make your discovery, make your discovery.
King Tut could be in there.
King Tut, yeah. Folded up like a little pencil.
Or pencil. A pencil. Like a bag.
Like a bag, okay. I'll give you that. So they remove the nails, and Mike lifts it to open it. To, you know, just to peek in, we kind of hear an animal noise, and Mike thinks he sees a couple of emeralds, but it's really two eyes peering back at him. Dexter tries to stop Mike from reaching in, but it's too late. He puts his whole arm in, and we start to hear crunching noises while Mike screams in pain. So Dexter fights to get Mike out of the crate, but all he ends up doing is just pulling the crate over, and they all fall on the floor. So what did you think about, like, with the way that that happened?
I don't know, it was kind of lame. Yeah, I don't know. I didn't really like that. I mean, he's like, why would... they don't have it open fully yet. So it's like, why would you stick your hand in a really small open space, you know, open the crate all the way up first, and then do something about it?
He saw emeralds.
I understand. Right, but then open the crate.
Why
would you... They just, if you have something half open, you see something in there, you're going to stick your hand in before it's all the way open?
I would try. No. If I saw emeralds, I'm reaching
That's
in.
Lame.
That's why lame. I get my arm ripped off.
Yeah, exactly. That's who you are in this.
I'm Mike. So yeah. He tries to reach to pull Mike to pull him away, but the top of the box crate, opens up, revealing like a ghastly, like, gorilla monster, I guess you would say, with razor-sharp teeth inside.
Have you seen the remake of It? Yet?
No.
See, there is a scene in the very beginning where it gets Billy, or not Billy, but his younger brother, Charlie?
I can't think of it.
But he gets him with the, he has the same kind of teeth. And it's what it made me think of, because he bites his arm off.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, chomps into it, like how this gorilla's teeth is. So like, it kind of made me think of that little, like, reference in nice. Nowadays kind of movies, still kind of the same thing.
Them razor sharp teeth either way are horrible.
Yeah.
So Dexter is freaked and watches as the monster basically devours Mike right before his eyes. So, you know, with good reason, Dexter bolts and runs into a young man named Charlie and is ranting about what happened incoherently, which, you know, that's a fair reaction in my opinion. I used to love when I was little and just trying to figure out what he was saying because he's just... You can't understand anything he's
saying.
Yeah,
I think it's a fair reaction. You know, sometimes in movies they have the character go out and they can just tell everything straightforward and how it is. But if I saw something like that, I'm not speaking.
No,
I'm not even moving.
I'm going to be incoherent.
It's going to get me.
No, I think that I mean, acting-wise, that was really, really a fair reaction. So, meanwhile, the monster is dragging its crate back under the stairs. Charlie doesn't believe Dexter at all. In fact, he's like, they're going to think you're coked up, is what he says. He's thinking, they're going to think I'm coked up if we go and tell the police. So he decides to go and have a look for himself, which you get what you get at that point in time. If you decide to go look and inspect, all bets are off for you. So Charlie sees the bloody scene and thinks that Dexter killed Mike first. So Dexter realizes that the crate is back under the stairs. So once again, Charlie plays inspector and goes to have a look. He sees one of Mike's boots and goes to fish it out, but Charlie doesn't see that the monster is to his left under the stairs and gets mauled up by the monster right in front of Dexter again.
Yeah, horrible.
So poor Dexter. I feel so bad for this guy the entire time because he's just having to watch these deaths. And they're not happy deaths either. They're chunks out, blood flinging all over your face deaths.
Gory, yeah.
I mean, yeah. So, but again, I don't feel bad for Charlie. Rip Mike, You wanted to be greedy, but Charlie, meh, you get what you get. So Dexter decides to go to Henry's house, screaming about how two people are dead and how he could be blamed for it, which is really, that's where you're at with
this. Why would you start screaming that down the neighborhood?
Yeah,
I mean, these people are going to have, you know, so much to work with here. I'd call the cops. I'd be like, these dang neighbors calling ruckus again.
Yeah, he's screaming about dead people. And
shut up and play chess.
Yeah, just play your chess. So Henry has Dexter tell him the whole story of what happened and seems disturbingly calm about it, in my opinion. Like, he's just like, okay. So Henry drugs Dexter and goes to the school himself to survey the situation. He sees the blood trails and finds that what Dexter said looks to be the truth. He uses a fan cleaner to fish the flashlight out and sees that it's pretty covered in blood. Now, when he first got there and knocked into the janitor's cart and that slap happens, did you jump at all?
Oh, yeah.
Because, man,
I did. I jumped. I thought you were going to say something to me about it, actually, and be like, oh, you jumped.
Yeah,
but no. But you didn't. But it spooked me.
When he's just about to try and take a look, he bumps into the janitor's cart and it's like makes a slam noise. And, man, that gets me almost every time. And when I was watching this again and had headphones on, I like jerked in the bed. I was like, oh, geez. And I was like, oh, man, I've been watching this since I was 5 years old and it still gets me. I'm lame. So Henry goes ahead and cleans up the blood and the mess. And we find that he left a note for Billy, who is considerably drunk again, explaining that Dexter called him and that he got in a bit of trouble with a female grad student. He also asked that Billy come to the college to help out with the situation. So while Henry finishes cleaning the rest of the blood up, Billy drives over to the school at his request. I found that up. I understand why they had to do it, but with her character-wise, I was like, "Is this? Would she really drive over?" But I guess she probably would, you know?
What would he do without her?
What would he do without her? Exactly, you're right. So Billy arrives and Henry calls her downstairs. I love that she still has her drink with her from home.
It looked like milk.
It's milk mixed with like sherry. I don't know. I'm not an avid drinker, so I don't know. But she definitely put alcohol in the milk. But I love that she brought that with her. Mm. And she was like driving down the road all sick face at everybody honking at her. She's like, meh. So Billy is asking about the girl and how bad it is. But Henry is having a hard time holding himself together, laughing. And Billy thinks he's hysterical. She's like, you know, oh, you're hysterical. And he's like, oh, no, it's not a joke. Henry leads Billy to under the stairs, saying she can get the girl out. He then charges in and knocks her down and starts beating her against the crate, yelling, wake up, wake up. I mean, he's really pounding her against this crate. I mean, like, her head's bobbling all over the place.
Yeah. And for a good while, too.
Yeah, he had her going crazy, man.
She wasn't really fighting back, though. She was just, like, kind of letting it happen.
She was just all limp body.
Yeah.
And just getting beat against this box. I was like, good gravy, man. But, yeah, just her little, she's still holding the glass of the milk alcohol. So unfortunately for Henry, it doesn't attack as he thought it was going to. And it looks like it's not going to. Then Billy starts to run off at the mouth again. And as she is giving Henry the business, the crate lid flies open. And the monster appears to grab Billy and starts to eat her. Which was a great, like, where they really flip to the comic book side of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I like
the
that. Right,
do you like that?
Yeah.
With the, turn, like, the red and blue lights and everything like that?
Yeah, you know that movie where the guy gets turned into a fly? Or, like, fly something?
The Fly?
The Fly. Fly.
Those are the moments right there. That's Cronenberg. We talked about
that. I can't remember. I couldn't remember what it was called. It was Flyman. The Fly, yeah. But, you know, the cover art for that is very dramatic-y and very comic-like, and I really like that. I wish they still did stuff like that nowadays instead of having the high-definition, like, photos and everything.
Oh, you're talking posters. About the original Fly? Like,
yeah.
The way, way back there. Not Jeff Goldblum Fly, but the one before that where, like, the lady's, like, screaming on the cover yep. and stuff like that? Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
I like when it's like that. I like cover yeah. art like that. It's cool to me. It touches my artist heart.
Sweet.
So. You saw all the mob movies back in the late 60s seemed to be like that, like the B-rated type movies.
Yeah. Do you know the, what is the one called? Reefer Madness. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah. Reefer Madness. But like, you remember like Creature from the Black Lagoon kind of had a cover like that. And Attack of the 50-Foot Woman was like that.
And I did one for the Patreon with my dad, The African Queen. And it was like that.
With Humphrey Bogart.
Yep. Yep. It was the same exact way. It was the same exact way. Very cool. Very good observation. Thank you. Yeah. I like that. So Henry is a bit sick and runs off. Afterwards, he returns with padlocks and is able to get the chains on the box locked up again. The monster kind of tries to escape, but is trapped. And that part made me jump again as well when he's got the lock on it just a little bit.
And it
like pops up real fast. Yeah, and the fingers come through. I was like, oh, get it locked, man. Get it locked.
Yeah.
So Henry takes the crate and dumps it into a quarry filled with water. Henry tells Dexter about what he did and asks him if he's going to say anything about it. And he's like, nah, man, I won't say anything. What are friends for? But the whole time his face at Henry is like, you're obviously kind of a planned killer. I don't want to mess with you.
But he also was there and watched two other people die.
Right. He doesn't want to get busted for it either. So he just go with what the cleanup is. So then they sit and play chess and go on with life. Dexter asks, what if it gets out of the crate? And Henry says, don't worry, because he chained it up good and it's 70 feet below water drowned. However, in the comic classic, we then see that the crate being broken apart and inside and the monster escaping from it. And that's how the story ends.
Yeah, why you would throw wood into water, like 1,000-year-old wood into water is against me.
It's 1,000, but it's hundreds.
It's old.
Yes. So cool. So are we good for some trivia?
Yeah, I'm ready for some trivia.
Let's do it.
Awesome. All right. So Creepshow is the only George A. Romero film that actually opened at number one for the box office, for the weekend box office. So out of all his movies that he released, it's the only one that ever opened at number one. The on-set nickname of the monster in the crate was Fluffy, as named George Romero named that himself like that. So
fitting.
A fun little fact about Stephen King: during a break in filming, he took his son Joe to a McDonald's, and as a joke, he made him up with bruises, cuts, and scabs, and everything like that from the makeup kit. And the girl at the drive-through window called the police on him.
Oh my gosh.
So I thought that was great.
Oh no.
It was like, yeah, he was that. Well, I mean, they got professional makeup. What are you thinking? So they took it through, and yeah, absolutely. She called. She said, oh, no, sir. I'm calling the cops. And as a good luck character, Stephen King carried a little Star Wars character. You remember Greedo from Star Wars, that Han Solo? Yep. He had a little Greedo character that he carried around in his pocket for good luck.
Oh, that's nice.
Yep. So that's all the trivia I've got for them this week. Well, for this.
Yes, episode, yeah.
So I have a question, Beth.
Okay.
Did you watch just the particular part that y'all were doing, or did you watch the whole movie?
We just watched the one part.
Okay, because I was going to get your insight on what your favorite episode, because they're all so different.
Yeah. I'll probably go through and watch all of them.
Yeah, we're going to be doing that. But I 100% agree that you've got... You know, the one with Ted Danson and Leslie Nielsen, where with the drowning, and you've got the birthday cake, and you've got the stuff with Stephen King all over them. Then you've got this episode, and then you've got the episode with the roaches. They are all 100% different, but 100% really good, in my opinion. Yeah. But again, watching this as a kid, my sister would be like, well, let's put on a scary movie. And it's like, not Creepshow, okay? And it's, no, we're going to watch Creepshow. And I'm like, oh, good. I won't sleep tonight then. That's good.
Yeah. Because,
go ahead.
That's okay. The very first story, I believe, is the Stephen King one. And it's like 100% comedy for the most part, except for the very ending of it. I mean, it's just completely comical. The crate has a mixture of comedy. And like you said, it's got the scariest part.
Yeah.
You know, that mixture, you know, the Leslie Nielsen episode, it's more of a psychological thriller.
Yep.
You know, so, I mean, there really is something for everybody in that.
I agree. Yeah, that the lonely death of somebody is what the one with the Stephen King, where he finds the meteor. And the doctor, and that's really the creepiest part of that, because he keeps having that flash of what's going to happen. First, he's going to be, you know, a millionaire, and then he's got the stuff growing on him. So he's afraid that the doctor's going to cut off his hand, and then it gets really sad. And then at the end, you know, he basically commits suicide, and he's like, please let my luck be just once. And that's how it ends. It's really sad. It's a sad part.
The movie is genius. It really is. When you combine the minds of Stephen King and George Romero, you know, that's what you're going to get, and that's what you would expect.
Yep. And I like that they obviously fed off one another with it and everything. So, yep. Very cool. Very cool indeed.
Yeah, I was just going to say that I think that my equivalent of this as a child, you know, you said you watched this when you were five. I think mine would be Goosebumps?
Goosebumps,
sure. Yeah. I think that would be my equivalent, because that was, I mean, that's kind of the same in a sense. You know, you take these books and there's little short spooky stories, and then you make a movie out of them, and it's like a combined of like six or seven of them all into one, and you just sit there and you watch them, and each one they just end differently, and it was really interesting to sit there and watch it as a kid and try and guess what was going to happen,
yeah,
and then not being able to. And I mean, I watched hundreds of those.
Did you ever watch Are You Afraid of the Dark?
No, I don't remember names.
It came on Nickelodeon on Saturday nights, and that was a pretty good little decent show for being on Nickelodeon. So
yeah,
that was past my bedtime.
It was a Goosebumps quality type show. Yep. It wouldn't too scary, but just scary enough.
Right, exactly. Enough for kids to get messing with your head before your parents say go to bed.
Yeah.
I think what I liked about Creepshow is that it really spawned a bunch of other anthology type shows. The biggest anthology show, or the oldest one I can remember going back, obviously Trilogy of Terror was awesome.
Yes.
And then I don't know if you're familiar with this one, James. This one goes back to probably about the same time. It was about the mid 70s. It had a very young Joan Collins in it, and it was called Tales from the Crypt.
Yes.
But it was just a movie that had, I think, three episodes. They were all basically people that had met down in, I guess it was like almost like a St. Peter version of hell.
Yeah.
Where they all met there, didn't know why they were there, and they all had a story. And the story all basically had with them dying after and they were all horrible people.
Yeah.
But that was all, like, the, yeah.
Yeah. Is that the one that has the cat buried in the wall?
I don't remember that one. Oh. I remember the one with Joan Collins was one where she had killed her husband, and then the escaped Santa Claus,
yes,
had been gotten out of prison, and a daughter let him in, and he ended up killing her. That was one. And you know, they had one where a guy had killed his neighbor. So he was like a real rich guy, and his neighbor was just this real poor guy that was always helping all the kids, and the guy didn't like him, and he kind of got to all the neighborhood where they were scared of the guy and wouldn't let their kids come over, and the guy ended up committing suicide, and then he came back for this guy and killed him. And so, and then there was, like, I think the other one was a Monkey Paw type deal.
Yes.
To where they got the three wishes. So it was, but it's kind of cheesy, but it was mid 70s. But overall, it was a pretty good story.
Yeah. And what messed with me at the end was the ending where they were all basically in hell they were dead, and they all kind of just like stood up and accepted that. I remember.
But that's kind of the first, that and Trilogy of Terror are really one of the first ones that I really remember from back in the day. And but then, like you said, there was all kinds that came out after this. You've had Tales from the Hood.
Yep.
And I think they had a Tales of the Hood 2. They did a Creepshow 2. And then there was a bunch of other trilogies and anthologies that came out.
Yeah, those and I really enjoy where I can go and spend money. And maybe I don't like the first part, but I've got luck of the draw that I'm going to like two or three. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'm not gonna,
yeah, because I never really cared for the on Creepshow, the roach one. That's one that I never really, it just didn't do anything for me. But, you know, it's still one of my favorite movies because the other four were so great.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. This, the gross out factor of them roaches and then just having to deal with that growing up, I think it was a personal thing for me. More than anything. And then that tiki, it's not a tiki doll, it's the doll from Trilogy of Terror.
It's a Sunni fetish doll.
Yeah, those. You need one of those for the for your office.
Don't think I haven't looked.
Oh, gosh. No, I think I would quit if I came downstairs one day and that was here waiting for me. We have a Chucky doll that sits behind the computer.
Yeah.
So I look up occasionally and I see that. But if I saw that dang thing from that, no, I wouldn't be able to focus.
Yeah.
I'd feel like it was cursing me the entire time. Yeah. Putting hexes on me.
She messes with its little spear, man. You don't mess with its spear. You take the little tag off and it gets you. So
yeah, it's such a good movie.
It is. It really was. And you're absolutely right with all the anthology movies. We'll have to catch some of those too. Tales from the Hood was really good. I liked that movie. It ended the same way. And then the HBO, I know that the other one did the Tales from the Crypt series. That series, I really enjoyed that growing up. That was one of my favorite shows.
Absolutely loved it.
There was an episode that had the guy had done a experiment on a guy and given him the 9 lives of a cat. I don't know if you remember that episode, but he put something in his brain. So he was doing an act in a circus where he would die. But you know, everybody thought that he somehow survived the trick. And then he miscounted how many lives because he forgot that the cat died as well. So he thought he had one more life, but he really didn't have another life. And I thought, oh, they always ended that way. And I always like how there was just a little bit of a trick at the end that it was like, oh, that didn't turn out good at all. Yeah,
that Creepshow was great. I mean, I loved all those, you know, Twilight Zone and Night Gallery. You know, Rod Serling did a movie. I can't think for the life of me what it's called. He did a movie that was back around the Twilight Night Gallery times. And it was, I think it had 3 stories with it. Yeah, it was a trilogy. And it was phenomenal. It was one of those that I don't think ever came out of the theaters. I think it was more of a made-for-TV thing. And but it had a story of a practical joke that went wrong where these young college kids, this one guy set up another one to go to this girl's house. She really likes you, man. Go. And it turns out it was just they gave him a wrong address.
Oh, wow.
And he shows up to some old woman's house that has a gun and she's scared and she accidentally shoots and kills him. And the boy's mother basically puts a curse on all of them. So that was one. There was another story about a mysterious hole that's supposed to be in Missouri, to where all these strange sounds and stuff would come out of it, and a guy got lowered down into it because the little boy thought he lost his dog, and when they pull him back out, I mean, he's gone absolutely insane because of whatever he saw down in the hole. And I can't remember right off the bat what the other story was, but there was 3 stories in that. I'll find out the name of it and shoot it to you.
Yeah.
It's on YouTube and you can probably not find it anywhere else, but yeah, it's a really, really good story. I think it's called Tales of the Unexplained is what it's called.
Okay. Very cool.
But yeah, pretty cool.
He's a whole episode by himself.
I literally have thought about doing an episode of just the life of Rod Serling. If nothing else, I'll probably do it on Patreon because he was completely fascinating.
Very cool. I think that's actually called Encounters with the Unknown.
That's what it is. That's exactly what it is. Yeah, I knew it was something like that. Yeah. But yeah, that's like I said, not the greatest acting in the world, but it's one that you'll enjoy to watch.
Oh, I don't. Yeah, if it's a good story, and that's what Beth really gives to it a lot. She'll go, you know, the acting can be off. She's got a 5-point process that she looks at it, but if it's a good story, then that can sell her on it, I think.
Yeah, I try to be fair because we have a system. We give it like out of moves, out of 5 moves, and we go through and rate each one. And I know you like to rate them based bias wise. You always give things like 4s or 3s.
I do.
And I try really hard to actually break down the movie and just like completely go through it. And I try to give good reasoning when we do things. If I don't like a movie and I think that it's not just all that, then I try to give good reasons why, and not just, oh, I just didn't like this movie, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that we haven't had, I think recently we've had more wins than we have losses with movies that I've liked.
Yeah, you didn't like Something Wicked This Way Comes.
No, I did not like that movie.
Which is one of my favorites, so.
Yeah. Guys, it's been super fun having you on. James, Beth, I hope you guys continue to have success. I hope you guys will go and subscribe to the podcast and listen. I've listened to most of the episodes you got out. I've loved everyone that I've listened to. I've listened to your episode on Leslie's podcast. That was great as well. Yeah. Tell everybody how they can keep up with you on social media.
All right. So we have the yesteryearpodcast@gmail.com is a great way to email us if you ever want to send us over stuff, recommendations, or anything like that. We love that. We do have Twitter, twitter.com/yesteryearpcast. Instagram is instagram.com/yesteryearpodcast. We're on Facebook, yesteryearpodcast. We do have a private group. It's called the Truffle Shufflers, which is a throwback to the Goonies, of course. Love that. You have to know our names to get in, James and Beth. Our website right now is yesteryearpodcast.buzzsprout.com. And that's about it. We do have a Patreon, but you know what? Listen to the show, love us, and then get into that, I'd say. So,
great idea. Guys, it's been fun. I appreciate you coming on and doing one of my favorite movies.
Man, I appreciate you having us.
Yeah.
So. Well, guys, continued success, and I'm sure we'll be seeing big things out of you in the future.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a great night.
Bye. Bye. They sure were a fun interview.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
They know their movies, too. I know that.
I know it. That's so good. That's really fun, too.
And I'll say this, too. Beth, to be 17 years old, is mm-hmm. way beyond her
years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I never would have thought she was only 17, so... I told this story because Leslie Fear actually interviewed him mm-hmm. on her show. And that's when I found, I didn't realize because I hadn't listened to every single episode before. I'd listened to a couple of episodes and I didn't realize that they were father daughter.
Yeah. So you had a fun thing to do together.
Yeah. So it's pretty cool. Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool.
Awesome. Well, guys, that wraps it up for this week. Don't forget to go subscribe to the Prairie Land Paranormal Podcast. I know those guys would appreciate it. They're just getting off the ground, and they would love everything that you guys can
That's
do.
That's right.
Them.
Show them some love, y'all.
Show them some love.
I'm just sorry. Go ahead, baby.
No, go ahead. I was done.
No, I was just going to say, I just hope everybody has a blessed week. We love you guys. If y'all need anything, please don't hesitate to give us a call. And just love one another.
Yep. And if you want to buy any merchandise, go to our store. I've got to put it in there somewhere.
Okay.
Well, I'm sorry you always do all this peace and love and all this stuff at the end. And I feel bad trying to say, oh, yeah, and send us some money somehow.
Oh, well, just send us love.
All right, guys. Thank you. And we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step 3. Create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.